Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
This week, putting it all together, our discussion on handling philosophy and the senses concludes with this discussion showing how this has impact for those handling cats, as well as for all of us in our everyday lives.
Now, all of this we're talking about, of course, have been more examples of choices that you're having them do for behaviors where you're actually on the other side of the enclosure, and they're inside and you're outside.
Yes, and that is, of course, also a key feature. When you're working with a cat inside, then it's a very different set of rules. In that regard, the person who is going to be in contact, person/persons in contact with the cats, have to be given complete control over the environment, and it becomes the responsibility of everyone else who's around to follow the instructions of that person, because that they are no longer just there on their own recognizance. They are now part of a sensorium that the handler is attempting to control for the cat.
Have you noticed that the cats react to you differently when you're on the inside of the enclosure versus on the outside?
Yes, and that is partially a comfort zone for them. They do know what the fence is. And contrary to what some people might think, in many cases, they see it as a safety thing, that we can't get them, so to speak. They know that they're safe on that side, they're in their territory, and we're in ours. And even though they may play with us from either side, they behave differently when suddenly it's not there. Sometimes that behavior can be positive, and sometimes it's not.
And as we mentioned before, once the behavior is being exhibited in a negative outcome, of course, that's too late. So you have to really be using your influence to make sure that the right choices are being made when you're so exposed as to be inside the enclosure with them.
Exactly. And that process starts well before you even enter the enclosure. Just like with the feeding, the first thing is that you have to be very self-aware. If you are not feeling, quote unquote, yourself that day, then that's not a day that you want to be going around in enclosures, because you have to be very centered so that you can be aware of your own senses as well as your impact on their senses. But I'll give you an example. The lionesses and Nathaniel, they tend to be pretty affectionate, pretty interested in people. Khonsi in particular does love to have people come up and give her scratches on the cheek and rubs and will follow people along the fence line. But in those occasions where I do go into that enclosure to work with her specifically, she does not like to be touched ordinarily, or she likes to be touched very much on her terms. She might walk up and give a very soft greeting lick, accept a pat on the head or a brief scratch under the chin. But then once that's finished, she will sit about 3 feet away, 2 to 3 feet away, and has no problem being in proximity, but just doesn't want to be touched again.
That's interesting. So normally very affectionate when the enclosure is between you, but not so affectionate when you're on the inside.
Yes, it's almost a shyness. It's not that she's not being social, because if she didn't want to be seen, she would run and hide or she wouldn't approach. But she just keeps a close distance, and it's really unusual. It's interesting. Her sister, on the other paw, likes to come right up and give a big head nuzzle and rub, and occasionally we'll try and roll on her back and paw at you from on her back, being very affectionate and cute and quote-unquote normal, Whereas outside the enclosure, sometimes she'll even ward people off, where she will, you know, give them a little bit of a growl or show some teeth.
So very different behaviors based on what side of the fence you're on.
And of course, who you are.
So we've talked a little bit about how the choices are made and how you influence their behaviors by influencing their choices. And by the way, I think you could also show that to be something that people do with each other as well. For example, one thing that comes to mind is when you're watching TV and, you know, or you're getting emails or whatever, and companies will oftentimes send you advertisements for sales or discounts. And of course, that's part of their way of influencing your choice to go into that store. And then they even put time limits on it, that it has to be this weekend, and they're influencing your choice of when to go to that store. So they're trying to give you those stimulus to make you go into the store and look at an item and know that you have a time limit to purchase it and take it home. So this concept of influencing choices is used day in and day out with all of us, not just with handling cats.
Exactly. And we have several people who have been professionals who've come out to the facility, and some who are, you know, business owners and whatnot, who have commented on how much they enjoy working around the cats because it makes them, in some ways, better leaders. There is a lot of information out there about leadership, and a lot of it is kind of cerebral, inspirational, or it can be prescriptive in some cases. But fundamentally, what leadership boils down to is being able to elicit a response from people that is going to suggest for them that it will behoove them to follow your lead. And we sometimes get wrapped up in the single sense mechanisms, where it's about what we say, what people hear, or we end up ascribing the visual elements to superficiality, or what people wear, how people move and whatnot. But some of those subtle things that we do when we're trying to handle the cats becomes extremely important for handling people. And it is a full sensory experience. How you say things, how you sound to people makes a huge difference. And anybody who has talked about not liking someone's tone will recognize the importance of appropriate sound. Same thing with even touch, actually, which is still a kind of a taboo in human society. Accepting those socialized forms of touch, you'll find reams of information about the way to give a proper handshake, for example. That is the human form of touch. And all of these senses that we use to handle the cats force us to be aware of our senses from a purely survival basis, because you're not going to be able to work around them if you can't really master some of these senses. And likewise, it's very hard to work with other humans if you are not cognizant of how you're affecting their senses.
So your behavior is obviously affecting the behavior of the cats as well.
Precisely. If you are off that day, you know, the cats may still respond because they want their own outcome. They still want to have food. But it's not that they didn't notice that perhaps you're walking with a bit of a limp today, or that perhaps you haven't been, you know, shoulders back, for example. Especially those cats that are more socially focused, they key very much on body language. And you don't want your body language to alter the way that they are going to react.
So we've talked a lot about conscious choice, because we've talked about the different senses that lead into what ultimately becomes a conscious choice. But earlier in the show, we had mentioned unconscious choice. So how can we use that as part of your behavioral handling effort?
Well, to use a very simplified sandwich method, the unconscious choice is going to comprise all of those behaviors, thoughts, actions that perhaps didn't pass through our cognitive filters. And unconscious choice is not something that we really have direct access to. An unconscious choice is going to be the culmination of patterns that are derived from a series of conscious choices, and that also mixed in with instincts and internal processes are going to create the unconscious. So if you accept that conceit, and I know that it sounds a little bit complicated, but if you accept the conceit that the unconscious is influenced by the frequency of the conscious, then you recognize the importance of trying to do what you can to influence that which is conscious so that you can have a surrogate effect on the unconscious. A good example for this would be the shifting. For a conscious mechanism, we consciously begin to call the cats to shift over and over, day in, day out, year after year, to the point where even when we're walking in the direction of the shift enclosure, they will begin to recognize unconsciously that it's going to be time to do that. And it really, if you can control the unconscious behaviors, then that's where you derive the greatest ability to handle a cat.
Back to an example of an unconscious choice. For example, for a human, if you were to toss something at someone, generally they're going to catch it or bat it away.
Yes, and that may be a combination of instinct and training or life experience, but yes, if something is coming at a person's face, then they're going to react to it.
Right. So there are some instinctive reactions too, and I'm assuming that obviously the cats have these kind of instinctive reactions as well.
They do. Some of the more obvious, more common ones might be their instinct to sniff, to smell. So, for example, if we offer them something new, they will usually come and investigate it by smelling it first, then by possibly mouthing it second, or pawing at it. It's just the mechanisms whereby they kind of investigate their world.
And are you able to use that to some degree for your handling of their behaviors?
Well, sure, especially the approach vector, because when we're doing identification, you know, many times we'll hold a hand up to the enclosure and they will almost instinctively lean towards it so that they can sniff it, smell it.
So some of those behaviors are exhibited day to day, even, what you're saying?
Day to day and just instinctive. Or a lick response. If you scratch a cat along their back, they generally will start grooming their paws.
Oh, that's interesting. You scratch them along their back and they groom their paws.
Yes. It seems to elicit a grooming effect. And this can be utilized for a number of different things, not the least of which is going to be potentially administration of medication. If you are able to spray something onto the paw or onto the forearm and then scratch the back, they will instinctively lick it up.
Oh, that's interesting. It's a good way to get medication, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if something is terribly bitter, it's not that it's a switch that you turn on and they can't stop. They just have to lick it off.
I can't control myself.
But yeah. Uniformly, once they get that scratch there, then they will start grooming.
So clearly, a spoonful of sugar in the medicine of a cat doesn't do any good at all since they have no sweet sense, right?
Right. Minimal, definitely.
Handling philosophy and the senses involved will continue in just a moment. You're listening to CIFAR Sounding. Thank you. and we're back. You're listening to CIFAR Sounding with host Zimbalwilt and Asa Gonsler talking about handling philosophy and the senses.
So is there an effort when you're giving the medicine to put something in it that makes it pleasurable for them to eat what that is?
That's where we try to choose the meat carefully. If the cat doesn't like red meat, then you don't give them meds in red meat. If they don't like pork, then you don't give it in pork. And sometimes it's just about making sure that the meds are either so deep or so carefully placed that they don't have a chance to smell it.
Okay, so it's deep enough that the sense is not picking it up.
Right. Or sometimes you can stimulate just their normal hunger routine. For example, if you've got multiple pieces of meat, the cat is going to be eager to get to that next piece of meat because they want to eat the ball. So if the med's in the first piece of meat and you're showing them the second one, then their emphasis is going to be, I got to finish this piece really quickly so I can get to the second one.
That sounds like a good way to get the right outcome.
Sometimes it works. Because we have some cats that are remarkable at being able to dissect a piece of meat such that every pill inside will fall out, and then they can still eat the meat.
That's impressive. So obviously they have a very good use of their tongue while eating.
Tongue and their jaws to be able to shred that just right.
Yeah, and still spit out the medicine.
Mm-hmm. Intact, no less.
Intact, no less. That's got to be frustrating.
It's a special kind of frustration, knowing that you've been summarily outsmarted.
Absolutely.
in this completely thwarted. It's equal parts pride and
Going to that, kind of turning the tables a little bit, do you happen to notice if the big cats are using their own influence of choice on you? Heavy sigh.
Yes, kind of. It's somewhat hard to tell sometimes whether they're doing something, whether they're doing an influence of choice on us, because there are certain, especially with certain people, in certain scenarios, the cats seem to suddenly develop this motor amnesia.
What do you mean by that?
Where they may choose not to do a behavior that they do for everyone else, almost a willful disobedience.
For certain people?
For certain people, where a good example might be giving the meds. There are certain people who just can't give meds to certain cats because they just will not take food from that person. And then there are other people who can get that cat to eat anything, you know, and give them nails. They'd eat nails. they'd do anything for that person. And so to a certain degree, they're exercising their way of saying, you know what, I don't like you. I'm not going to do this for you. Or on occasion when you have somebody who's trying to get cats that are difficult to shift, for example. You try and shift the cats and it doesn't work. Sometimes the answer is that you have to go away and have somebody else do it because you may be the stimulus that is causing them to choose not to perform the behavior that you wanted to.
Wonder what it is that makes them not like certain people. And of course, people are that way too. You like some people, you don't like some people. It's a common thing. But I guess you don't think about the cats doing that with the handlers, but clearly they do.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, the handlers think about it and should be thinking about it all the time. Anytime that that cat has a negative experience and you are around, you run the risk of muddying the relationship, the positive relationship that you're building up with them. If it's bad enough, you can actually shatter it, whereby a cat that has a traumatic experience and you are present for that.
Not that you caused it, you just happen to be in sight or smell or whatever.
Exactly. You just happen to be somehow present for that. that can damage a relationship.
Because they associate that negative behavior with you.
Exactly. A classic example may be Raja with guys. Raja does not like guys. And perhaps that is a result of having a male owner that previously, you know, abandoned him. Or it could be the result of the fact that, you know, when he was first put under anesthesia, it was mostly a crew of guys that moved him. Anesthesia is a unique situation because that alters the senses of the cats before they go down. So if you can imagine being surrounded by people that you know and then having a bad psychedelic trip before falling unconscious, that could sometimes have an impact on a cat's impression of someone.
So you have to be very careful of those kind of situations then, that if something negative is happening, that somehow you're not associated with that.
Exactly. And some people, there are some cats that occasionally need a little bit more encouragement and sometimes need negative reinforcement in the form of perhaps being sprayed if they don't like water, for example, to get them to behave in a certain manner. In those instances, that is going to be a strain on the relationship of the person who's doing it, and it can have collateral damage if the cat chooses to hold a grudge with everyone else. I find myself always going back to apologize and make sure that the relationship holds firm. If a cat chuffs at me and I don't chuff back, they could take offense at that.
That's interesting. So talking to the cats and using their language is obviously part of this whole connection with them as well.
Right, because they don't like to be ignored either. If they are going to say, hey, I'm making noise, pay attention to me, for predators that kill in silence, for them to make noise and say, hey, I'm here, acknowledge me, you should acknowledge them.
Right. Chuff at them. Did you use any other noises to speak with them?
Sure. You can chuff. You can make sure that you say their name in soft, affectionate ways. Depending on the species, you may give them a soft hum or a grunt. You can chirp at the cougars, for example.
So you actually can chirp at the cougars and they understand that as a greeting of some kind?
They understand something. I'm not entirely sure sometimes what they understand. But it depends on, you know, sometimes they respond back. You know,
they chirp back at you.
They'll chirp back or they'll meow back. And sometimes you can have whole conversations this way where you're chirping back and forth. You know, you make a noise, they make a noise. You make a noise, they make a noise. Sometimes it's just talk.
And it's just talk.
Sometimes
it's the gossip out of the facility.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's great. Obviously, that all of these things put together is what makes the handling of the cats also not only complex, but also so rewarding for you as a handler.
Well, sure. And there's a certain degree of instinct that comes into there. You know, you can't, for those people that are by the book listers where you want to list out every scenario that can possibly happen, it's not possible. You know, ask any parent, you know, where's the manual for this kid? It's very much like that, where over time, you have to allow the frequency of contact and the instincts that are developed from those contacts to create a functional cloud whereby you develop a degree of unconscious competence in knowing how a specific cat is going to react. This unconscious competence shared between the two species is what makes the relationship so strong and what makes them so rewarding, because it's not something that you can buy, program, or otherwise. It's something that develops over time and can be a very magical experience.
CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wills. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.